It's KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Last month on this show, we were talking about race, specifically whiteness, with Dr. Robin DiAngelo, who does trainings on racial equity around Seattle. She's the person who coined the phrase white fragility. Well, after that interview ran, we got your emails, we got your phone calls, so we invited Robin DiAngelo back. Robin DiAngelo, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed our talk. The last time you were here, we talked about white.
Yes.
Some white people don't think of themselves as white or don't want to identify that way.
A key aspect of being white is that it's unmarked and unnamed. It's not something that we have to think about.
And we got a phone call about that.
Hi, Bill. It's Joanne on Vashon Island. Love your show. I just wanted to say that I am white. I'm 65, and I never thought of myself as white. Can you believe it? Even though I lived in San Francisco, where whites are a minority, and I lived there for 20 years. But about a year ago, I kind of woke up to being white when I had a roommate who was Mexican-American, and she called me white at one point when we were having a conversation. I was like, what? So we started laughing and having a personal talk about that.
A white person opening up.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's great. I mean, that's the beginning. We need to do it.
I want to play one more phone call for you because you and I talked in our last visit about white Seattle liberals and how they can be hard to deal with when it comes to race. So we got this call.
But I always think when they say, oh, the liberals are like the worst problem because they are so self-congratulatory and but they're not much better. Oh, I think that is a really gross generalization. I grew up in Chicago. My dad, my grandfather, who were very otherwise, you know, very decent men, were both really bad racists. And I've striven my entire life to get rid of that, to shuck that off. And now I go out of my way to treat everyone of any race or any ethnicity or anything just as fairly and as kindly and as I try to do the best I can with everyone and have no preconceptions or anything like that. And I like to think that I've done a pretty good job of it. I feel that way anyway. And for her to say that and just to lump me with people who, you know, pretend to be, you know, that way when they're not, discounts my own struggles with it and makes me feel like she didn't know me and I wish she wouldn't speak for me.
Why are you overgeneralizing about white Seattle liberals?
Well, in a way, I'm poking at myself because I am a Seattle liberal and I sincerely believed that that exempted me from my larger socialization in the same in many ways that this man just articulated. And on one level, it's if you don't identify with what I just said, then why the defensiveness? Why worry about it, right? If indeed you have no challenges or issues, let it go. However, I would find it very problematic as a white person to say I have no challenges and no issues, that I treat everyone the same. I have no implicit bias. It's just not humanly possible to have no bias.
This was a bit of a theme in the email responses I got. Lisa says, as a white woman and mother, I've studied and made friends of various cultures. Why is it okay to make sweeping generalizations about white people being racist when I can honestly say I'm not?
You can only honestly say you're not if you have a definition of racism that is, it is conscious dislike, and it is not possible to function across fond regard. So if I have friends, I have fond regard, therefore I cannot have racism. It's a very simplistic understanding of what racism is.
Well, if I'm one of those well-meaning listeners and I'm white, why am I racist?
We are swimming in cultural water. And, you know, it's hard in a really short period of time on an interview, but one of the things I work really hard to do in my presentations is make that water visible. And that water is filled with relentless messages of white as ideal, as the norm for humanity. You can't help but internalize it. And it does manifest in unconscious ways. Let's use this example of I marched in the 60s. This is a very popular kind of evidence that a lot of older white people use.
Marching in the 60s, that's putting yourself out there.
Yes. And on the one hand, I want to definitely affirm and say thank you to those people because we needed to do that. We had to get involved. Thank God white people got involved in marching in the 60s. And that didn't free them of all the unconscious racism they were probably running when they went down to the South, the patronizing, the condescension, the white savior. I'm sure some of those dynamics were happening. You know, it wasn't this ideal world in which the, you know, pure white people with no racial bias went down to save the black people from those who were filled with racial bias, right? The kind of good whites versus the bad whites.
Are you speaking from experience? Is no part of you a patronizing, condescending white savior?
Ooh, excellent. Thank you. I'm sure that I am in moments. And if you gave me feedback that I was coming across that way, then I would be willing to look at that. I would actually be more likely to look at it if you were a person of color giving me that feedback. Mm-hmm. But the other thing I want to say about people who marched in the 60s is this idea that it certified them as free of racism for the rest of their lives. It's been 60 years. There's been incredible evolution in their understanding of racial dynamics in those 60 years. I mean, what other kind of situation do you get certified and never have to take another test, if you know what I mean? It's not good evidence. And I will often ask people of color in my audiences, you know, is this evidence that so many white people give convincing? You know, I marched in the 60s. My parents were racist, therefore I'm not racist because I made sure I wasn't. Gary Locke was governor. Is this convincing?
I literally got an email about how Norm Rice was mayor, Ron Sims was King County executive, and Gary Locke was governor. And they say, look, we're over a race.
That's right. And when Hillary Clinton becomes president, on that day, patriarchy will end, right?
Over gender, yeah.
No. And actually, I think a white person who's just convinced that they couldn't possibly is really problematic because it's really hard for that person of color to give us feedback.
It sounds like that defensiveness, that frustration that I heard from some of our listeners, you're saying, look into that.
Please, yes.
I got a note from a listener who says, I fear that the left, of which I consider myself, is being ruined by this movement by preaching microaggressions, trigger warnings, and the like. How can we, whites, embrace other cultures if we cannot even ask, where are you from?
I know it's a common refrain, you can't say anything anymore, PC police. And I would really like to ask the person, really sincerely, what is it that you can't say anymore that you wish you could be saying? That's the first thing I would ask. And really, tell me where your life has been limited by these really simplistic characteristics of, you know, trigger warnings and things like that. Those are the extremes. I don't think that they're the norm. We have to be willing to grapple with the impact of our interactions. And where are you from? And the person tells you California, then that's where they're from. And when you follow up, what you're really asking is, what is your race? And if that's what you want to ask, ask it. Ask it openly and directly. Now, I would kind of caution you to kind of examine, why do I want to ask them their race? But the impact of that is they never get to be individuals. They always need to be reminded that they don't fit in. They don't look like they belong. They couldn't possibly be from here, even though they may be fifth generation, much longer than my family, right? So let's ask what we really want to know, but these kind of coded racialized questions convey a message that is hurtful for people. And why not pay attention to that? If I tell you that that question is hurtful and I explain to you why can't you take that in and be willing to reflect on it? Why are you so sure that I'm wrong about my experience?
You've talked about that certitude, that white confidence.
Yes, it's very frustrating to me. I think it's one of the key aspects to being white in this culture is this incredible lack of humility, this incredible arrogance. This is the most complex, nuanced social dynamic since the founding of this country, hundreds and hundreds of years. And in spite of so many white people feeling completely free of racism, we have consistent racial inequity. This society produces racial disparity, and it does it beautifully. And yet, nobody's racist anymore. So we've got to look at, ask ourselves, how is that happening? And I would argue that this narrative, this idea that it's simply a matter of open-mindedness and conscious ill will, and if I have none, if I'm not aware of any kind of implicit bias, then I'm good to go. I would argue that that's what's holding it in place. And that's another key piece to being white, is this refusal to know. On what other topic do we feel so confident to refuse further investigation?
Here's one more. Today's social justice warriors... You're already shaking your head. Teach people to hate others based on what they think those others think of them, because I feel bad, it's your fault. It tosses out generations of self-empowerment and replaces it with blaming, perpetual grievance, and self-pity.
It's actually incredibly transformative. I'm saying, look at the society we're in, look at the structures, look at the messages. I can't tell you how transformative and liberating it is to start with the premise that, of course, I'm a product of the society I live in. Of course, I have absorbed problematic racial ideas. Of course, I have some degree of racial superiority, and I have some implicit bias. And when I start from that premise, now I can work to identify and challenge those things within myself, rather than spend all my energy denying that anything's going on and feeling defensive and feeling maligned. It's so liberating.
So you don't have to feel miserable. You can start with the humility and forgive yourself and be curious and start there.
Yes. You know, I use the analogy of the sky. I have an opinion on the sky. Right. I mean, I've looked at it every day of my life. I like it best at dusk, and, you know, it's really pretty. And, you know, when I was young, I went camping with my dad, and we laid on our backs, and he pointed out the Big Dipper and the Little Dipper. So, you know, I have some knowledge of the stars. Of course I do. And if Neil deGrasse Tyson walks in the room, I'm going to be quiet and listen. Right. I'm not going to say, my dad said, there's 9 planets. Pluto's a planet. I'm going to, I hope, engage with the newest thinking, with where we are today in our understandings of cosmology. I'm not an expert on cosmology. And I actually think racism and racial dynamics are as complex. Where is our humility?
Finally, Robin, so we've heard from some white KOW listeners who say, hey, get off my back. I think I'm there. I'm doing okay. I'm well-meaning. I'm trying. If you're saying that's not enough, what can a listener do to do better?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is, how do you know? Right? How are you doing your best? What does that look like? And yes, I'm going to make a generalization here. Usually what that means is I'm a very nice, friendly person across race. That's generally what I'm doing my best means. And what I would say is that is not enough. Niceness is not courageous. Niceness will not get you to break with white solidarity, will not get you to get racism on the table and keep it on the table.
I thought of you on Monday because I got my foot x-rayed, and my radiologist, that was Halloween, my radiologist said something about how some costume he used to wear that you could never get away with today because, you know, it's so politically correct. And I thought of you. I thought, I'm supposed to say something here to my radiologist. I didn't know what to say. I didn't say anything. It's his world, you know?
Yeah.
I'll pick a fight with this guy?
Well, what you can say in those moments, you may not shift your radiologist, but it's also really healthy and important for you, right? To kind of break with that and to take a risk, even if it's just a little one, so that you can go home and feel, okay, you know, I wasn't complicit. And it could be, yeah, I hear you. It's always useful to affirm where someone's at. And, you know, the more I've been involved in this work and heard about the impact, and the more I understand how those costumes reinforce really problematic assumptions, I gotta say, I get it now, or some version of that, right? Or I met someone who shared a story about what it was like for them to see their culture mocked in that way. That's how they experienced it. And I can't tell them, you know, that that's not their experience. But I can never not see their face when I see that costume. It's just changed for me now. So you've connected it to yourself. You haven't said you're a racist, right? But in a very light way, you've kind of injected a little more understanding or knowledge into the conversation. And it'll be a little harder for him to kind of say that without thinking.
You're good, D'Angelo. I wish you'd have been there.
Oh.
Robin D'Angelo studies whiteness, and she came up with the term white fragility, that you may have heard. And she co-developed the City of Seattle's Race and Social Justice Initiative Anti-Racism Training in partnership with communities of color. What do you think about what you just heard? Where are you in this whole arc? You can email us, record@kuow.org, record@kuow.org. You can give us a call, 206-221-3663, 221-3663.